Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Fred Schepisi's 1992 film, Mr. Baseball. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hi, Ben-san.
Hi, indeed.
That's me saying hi.
Yes.
So, yeah. And I actually just said everything in English.
Okay.
But the tone I used made it sound like I was speaking Japanese.
Yeah, the Japanese word for yes. Yeah, I got it. Okay. Great.
Language is a fickle mistress, Ben.
As the longtime listeners of our podcast know, language is a fickle mistress indeed. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. That's 904-469-NJNM. For those of you who prefer to do
smooth.
It that way. Or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this in every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, you have the character name game for this.
Oh, I do. Let me just give that to you right now, and then you can guess at the end of the episode.
All right.
Today's character name game is, and you have to guess the movie that this character is from, and it has some correlation to some movie that was released over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That name is, for the character name game, Gary Houseman.
Gary Houseman.
Gary Houseman.
Okay. I was tempted to ask if you could use it in a sentence, just because it sounds like the way that you were saying
hey, look.
It sounded like a...
hey, look, there goes Gary Houseman.
I like it. It sounded like a spelling bee thing, but... all right, cool. So let's go ahead and move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, or concerts, or things we've been watching, reading, consuming of all sorts. So, Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
Well, Ben, you had mentioned this documentary back in episode 69, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Cool World. You mentioned the film, the docu-film, I believe they're calling it now, the Rockafire Explosion.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I actually, I'm not going to lie to you, when you mentioned it, I started watching it like a week after you had mentioned it,
mm-hmm.
and I was so embarrassed by the content of the documentary, like it was so... just so ridiculous that I just stopped watching it for, I'm going to say, whenever episode 69 was, like 3 months ago.
Sure.
So, yeah. And then this weekend, I finished it up. I think we gave it a bad rep. I think it's heartwarming if you make it all the way to the end. Because
uh-huh.
these people really love those animatronic robots.
They do.
And that one guy who I think before I watched it called maybe alluded to the fact that he was a pedophile. Not the case. Not the case. Very nice man. Just he really loves his Mountain Dew and he really loves Showbiz Pizza, which doesn't exist anymore. So I don't know where to put it as far as like how to get you to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely some weird parts. There's definitely like the one point where the really... the creator of Rockafire Explosion, like, gives you a tour of his defunct factory.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm the only one that works here now, but we're still in business.
Yeah.
And he goes, wait, don't step in that, because we haven't had it analyzed.
And it's, like, been, like, poured out for 20
yeah.
years or something.
Yeah, they've been out of business since, like, 2003. But he's got a really hot wife who's just, for some reason... obsessed with the Rockafire Explosion, so married the creator, which high fives all around. I mean, that's the American dream right there, is to create a semi-successful fake band and then marry the hottest groupie.
Oh yeah, and spin it off into a pizza place. Yeah, that's
yeah.
that is what people come to
God
Ellis Island for.
Bless America. Jets fly over. So yeah, check it out. I mean, It's probably one of those that you may want to watch with some buddies and just kind of, I don't know, make fun of it, I guess. But don't be too harsh, because don't be cynical, because it really is kind of a nice film. Ben, I remember you kind of thought it was just weird good. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's
once in a lifetime things.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's just like, it really is kind of fascinating to watch the... You know, because they intercut that movie with a lot of the TV commercials of the time
yeah.
and stuff, and you can see like how much money went into it at one point and how it really was like a highlight of kids' lives at a certain
yeah.
point. And then just watching something go from – watching anything for that matter go from a position of that height to the depths that they're at now is just really captivating, I think.
Yeah.
So
that was probably my favorite part of the movie, where he's like, yeah, we were coming in limos. I was getting helicopter into these restaurant openings. But then everyone realized we were losing tons of money. And then everything stopped. And I was just like, that is hilarious.
It's funny because it sounds like something you would do if you were in the position of, you know, like a semi-successful company. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm taking a helicopter into there.
Right, right. Just off the top, just activities, just burning the money and like in the red constantly, and then realizing one day you're just like, wait a second, why aren't you taking my credit card? Because you haven't done any work. Yeah. But in that same vein of film, a good friend of ours, Bose, and I checked out Chasing Ghosts Beyond the Arcade, which is kind of funny because it's very, very, very similar to not only Rock Fire Explosion, but also King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben, your all-time number one hero returns. Billy Mitchell.
Billy Mitchell. You have crafted so many number one all-time heroes for me, I honestly didn't know who you were referring to.
I think I remember you saying he's one of my all-time favorite heroes, so I just crack it up at number one. Billy Mitchell returns in Chasing Ghosts Beyond the Arcade, because Billy Mitchell was featured heavily in King of Kong. They came out the same year, I think, 2007?
Okay.
Right around the same time. And this one was about like this 1982 series of champions things. It also was kind of sad because a lot of these guys, their lives didn't turn out, you know, the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of guys just kind of went on to be regular people. And they're like, yeah, back like, you know, 30 years ago, we were awesome at video games and like people loved us. And this Twin Galaxies arcade that I guess do you remember in King of Kong? There was like the referee with the real crappy beard and he would collect all the scores.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name was Walter something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he's also the main guy in this one.
Okay.
And it's just kind of funny because it starts out, he's like, Twin Galaxies was opened in Ottumwa, Iowa, wherever they were, like back in 1981, and we're the number one place for video games in the country and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to like the end of the movie and you think Twin Galaxies has been open for like 30 years and now it's closed down, but it closed like 2 years later, like opened in 1981 and closed in 1983. And like, so all of its like popularity and fame occurred within like 2 years, and then everything else just dropped off. Like these guys that were in the tournaments, you know, they weren't into video games anymore. It was like 1 year where everyone was just obsessed with it, and then it all just vanished.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen Chasing Ghosts, but I did see King of Kong, and I feel like they had tournaments or matches or whatever they're referred to, competitions at a Twin Galaxies place. So isn't it still in business in some form or no?
I think it's, I thought so too, but then it showed clearly on the documentary, like Twin Galaxies closed down in 1983.
Huh.
And we were just kind of like, wow, really? Like, we thought it was still open. But I think as an organization, it still collects scores.
Okay.
For high scores and stuff for these old games. I think that's how it exists now. And I guess they just use like old Showbiz Pizzas to have their gaming tournaments.
Gotcha.
Which weren't really tournaments. It was just people kind of crowding around one guy.
Yeah, like trying to go for
high score. High score. We got a high score over here. Kill screen. Kill screen.
So, how would you compare Chasing Ghosts? Like, what is the more? What's the scope of it? Because King of Kong was just basically like two guys battling out for specifically for the Donkey Kong champion.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff does Chasing Ghosts cover?
It was basically more of like an overall thing. I mean, there were like all these guys who all had their own game and they all had their own high scores and they're all their separate stories being told. So it's a little more in depth as far as like the video games themselves. Like, but there wasn't that competition between two people that was in King of Kong, which I think made the film a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This was just like straight, like if you really like old video games, and just kind of talking about it and seeing like the gameplay and stuff like that.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's just like, it's more nostalgic than anything.
Yeah.
But some of these, like one of these guys, his name was Mr. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I remember him from King of Kong.
King of Kong, too. And like, he won't call himself anything else. Like, he constantly calls himself Mr. Awesome. And he was in like a military outfit. And I was like, wait, you're Mr. Awesome, not Sergeant Awesome. Like, where do you get the military ranking? But he did like Missile Command. Like, that was his game. So he felt that he he was such an expert at Missile Command, like a military-related game, that he felt that he could wear, like, military attire.
Wow.
And, like, he had his own, like, comic book that he came out with, and he goes, this is the most important literary piece of history that has ever been created. And it was, like, the story of Mr. Awesome or something. Like, he was, I couldn't tell if he was serious or psychopathically, like, in himself. There was another guy who, like, they ask what they do now, like, as their occupation. Mm-hmm. Most of the guys are like, yeah, I'm an IT guy, or I'm, like, an accountant. And this guy was like, well, I don't want to say I'm a pimp, but my friends are pretty good looking.
So Mr. Awesome said that?
No, this is another guy.
Oh, okay.
So I turned to Bose, and I was like, yeah, that means you're a pimp, dude. Like, whenever you start a sentence with, I wouldn't call myself a blank, you're usually setting it up to say that I'm pretty much a blank.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's on Instant Watch, too. I think Rock of Fire Explosion's also on Instant Watch. So if you're looking for some ways to feel better about yourself, don't be cynical, though.
Yeah, in a wave of 70s and 80s nostalgia, apparently.
Yeah. If you feel like your life is just in the toilet, check out the guy that collects tarantulas in Chasing Ghosts, and I don't think you'll feel so bad.
Okay.
Right. He might come after me and kill me, so I'll stop right there.
Good stuff. All right.
As far as a book this week, in your bookend, up your bookend, whatever we call this, The Neverending Story, Ben. Are you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with the movie. I've never read the book.
Yes, it's a original German novel written by Michael Ende. Of which the movie is based. It's a little false advertisement because it's not quite never ending. There is an actual ending to the Never Ending Story, which
you can actually see it while you're holding it in your hand.
I was a little let down because it wasn't an ongoing tome that just started somewhere and then just went off into the distance.
Uh-huh.
It is a complete book. There's no sequels or anything like that, so it's clearly not never ending. It should just be called the Ending Story.
Mm-hmm.
Pick it up, check it out. It's kind of cool the way he wrote it because it's very similar to the movie, not very similar to the second movie, Never Ending Story, The Next Chapter, I think that's what it's called, where there's like a diving contest or something.
Okay.
The way he does it, like it's in red ink if it's in the real world and green ink if it's in Fantasia, so you're constantly knowing which part of the dimension you're in.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of interesting. So like at the very tumultuous middle, like the end of the first movie is the middle of the book, basically.
Okay. Cool.
And so when Bastion is conflicted as far as whether he wants to enter the book or not, like in the book it's like flipping back and forth between red and green ink.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? So it's a German book, so I don't know, it's kind of tame as far as, it's just kind of more fantasy than anything. I don't think there's really any themes. Atreyu's heavily featured.
Okay.
Of your all-time favorite number one bands, Ben, Atreyu.
Right, yeah, of course. remember the movie very well? Because I saw it when I was a kid and don't have very, clear memories of the movie.
Yeah, I watched it when I was a kid, too, and then rediscovered it on ABC Family while in high school.
Okay.
I was like, wow, is that what I was watching? And as a kid, I used to watch both of them, like part one and part two.
Mm-hmm.
I remember waiting for part two to come out, and then I would watch them. But then as an adult, I was like, wait, was that the same movie? Mm-hmm. Like, I melded the two together. The first one, okay. I like the second one, although the second one's a lot weirder. I like the second one because it's just weird.
Okay.
The first one's a little too empty. There's not a lot going on.
I mean, would you recommend reading the book for people who haven't seen the movie? Or?
No, I'd watch the movie.
Okay. All right.
You should only read the book if you're really, really into the movie because it's basically the same.
Okay.
Except the second part of the book. The second half of the book is very different from the second movie, so.
Okay.
That's up to you, man.
All right.
Never any story. It's ending.
Cool. Well, one of the things that you said in your description of that reminded me of a TV show that I don't know if I've spoken about on this podcast, but I'll just take this opportunity to talk about it as part of my media consumed. And the show is called Awake. And it's on NBC, and it stars Jason Isaacs, and it's basically about a guy who gets in a car crash in the pilot episode, and his life splits off into two realities, and in one of them, his wife dies, and in the other one, his son dies, and then the corresponding person lives in, in each of the opposite realities or whatever. So
not much of a show if he...
Right.
Falls asleep and just sits in a coffin all the time.
So he basically, when he goes to sleep at night, as soon as he closes his eyes, he opens them again and enters into this other dimension where, you know, either the wife or the son has survived, and he goes back and forth, and he's a police detective, so of course there are elements of him like solving cases and stuff, where clues in one reality will point him to the real killer or what have you in the second reality. And it's very, you know, up until this point in the show, we haven't really found out which one is quote-unquote real yet, or if one is more real than the other, if this whole thing is some sort of giant overarching experiment that we don't really know about. But it was created by Kyle Killen, who is the creator of Lone Star, which is that show that I was championing last year that only ran like two episodes before it got canceled. And it deals with a lot of the same themes, you know, like the duality and all that kind of stuff. But
he's a star and a loner, I assume, was the duality there.
He was living two lives, he had two girlfriends or two wives or something in Lone Star, but
high five.
And he was like a con man in one and a businessman in the other or something. Anyway, RIP Lone Star, but
hashtag RIP Lone Star. I hope you bring that back like 3 years after it's been canceled.
Yeah.
Lament.
Awake. The whole reason I'm talking about this is because you were talking about in the Neverending Story, it's green for one section of text to tell you that it's in one world, and it's red in the other one. And right. Awake does a similar thing where color-wise, there's like a, you know, kind of a blue tinge to one reality and like a greenish one to the other or whatever it is. And Jason Isaacs actually wears multicolored wristband, like Live Strong bracelet type of things on his arm that are colored to let him know which one he's in, kind of
very
like
Inception.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like a what was that thing called in Inception?
An anchor, maybe something.
No,
like
it was
that?
Like a
timepiece.
No, wow, how do I not remember this?
A Leonardo DiCaprio.
A totem.
That's right.
So anyway, yeah, I just, that reminded me of that, and I wanted to bring up Awake and the fact that I'm no longer watching it because
I was about to ask, should I watch it? Because I wanted to tune into it, and then it came and went, and I was like, meh.
Yeah, I mean, it's still airing right now. I think it's on Thursday nights on NBC at 10 o'clock. But for me, it's one of those shows that has a great concept, and the pilot was really fantastic, and, you know, the subsequent few episodes were good, but it just slowly started to slip into this groove of being more procedural and less serialized, which is, you know, longtime listeners of the show know that I'm much more, as far as TV goes, a
owner for serialized content.
Yeah, definitely. So I like things with season-long arcs and stuff, and because of the nature of this show and him being a police detective, it's very much like a case of the week type of thing, and there's not really a ton of stuff that connective tissue that leads throughout the season. So I couldn't do it anymore. And I'd been hearing, you know, good things about the show. So I started watching it almost immediately after it aired, and everybody's still like talking about it, you know, saying it's really good, blah, blah, blah. And then I just like somewhere there was a disconnect where I felt it went too procedural, and I just didn't want to devote the time to it. You know, it's like, if I'm going to watch a procedural cop show, I mean, I'm already doing that to some degree, watching The Shield, and even that is a cop show, but it has these overarching storylines throughout each season, so that's like a good example of a show.
Dick Mackey's a cop.
That's a good example of a show that does it correctly, I think, and I don't know.
That's like me and Two Broke Girls. Like, I tuned in because it started out with an awesome concept, get Kat Dennings and a long-legged blonde in a waitressing job together. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you go wrong, Ben? Right. And I had to stop watching Two Broke Girls. Sorry, Kat. I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the end of each episode, like, they add up how much money they made in the episode, and they're supposed to be working towards, like, a store, mm-hmm. like, to buy a cupcake store. And there were some, like, three episodes in a row where they didn't make any money. So it would just show the dollar amount, and then it would do like the cash register change, and then nothing would happen. It would just be the same amount of money. I'm like, this is going nowhere. Fuck you, click.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
We have similar tastes in television.
Yeah, so there's Awake. I mean, I would say it's like, if you haven't seen it yet, I would say wait and kind of see what the cultural consensus is. Maybe like it has a fantastic finale and then like the beginning of season two really kind of rights the wrong. I don't want to say like, you know, abandon all hope for the show just because it's still in its first season. You know, for me personally, I just didn't want to stick through and keep, you know, devoting time to watching it when I wasn't sure exactly where it was going to head. So
there's your headline right there. Await for Awake.
Okay.
Write it down.
Okay. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is a movie that I saw a few weeks ago that I thought I would be able to talk about on the Geek Tyrant podcast, but there's been all kinds of crazy scheduling issues we've been having over there, and we haven't had a chance to do one for a while. So I never got around to writing a review of this movie, so I wanted to speak about it and just, like, you know, fulfill my end of the deal of seeing a free press screening of it by talking about it in some way. So this is a movie.
Wait, is that how it works? Like, as long as you just mention it to somebody, you can get in for free?
I mean, I think it's supposed to be a little bit more in-depth than just mentioning it. But generally, almost always, I write reviews of it. But I was really busy also and just didn't have time to do it. And I was planning on, you know, talking with the guys at Geek Tyrant about it, but we just never got to it. So anyway, the movie's called Goon. Have you heard of this, Tyler? It's the Sean William Scott hockey movie.
No. I haven't seen the Goonies either.
Okay, yeah, the Goonies is terrible. Don't watch that. We're probably losing a lot of fans right now. People are tuning out as we speak.
Ben does not like that film.
But Goon is a hockey movie that stars Sean William Scott as a guy named Doug Glatt that's based on, from what I understand, it's based on a real guy who is just like a bouncer who really loves hockey. And he basically gets picked to be like one of the Bash brothers in Mighty Ducks. Like, that's his role on a minor league hockey team. So he gets like drafted by them, or not drafted, but just kind of enlisted, I guess. And he just like rolls around beating the crap out of people on the ice. Sean William Scott does a good job. His character is really, really simple. Like, and he is aware of that. Like, he says at certain points, like, guys, I'm stupid, I know, whatever. And it, for me, it was like a little too much in that direction, like a little too melodramatic with how not intelligent this guy is at all. There's a love interest that's played by, I think her name is Allison Pill, if I'm getting that right. I'll have to check that. But she was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And I thought she did a really great job. Jay Baruchel plays his best friend. Jay Baruchel, people probably know him from a lot of the Judd Apatow comedies and stuff. And I think Evan Goldberg, who is Seth Rogen's writing partner, another member of the Apatow school, if you will. Evan Goldberg and Jay Baruchel, I think, wrote this movie together. I've got the press notes right here. I'm trying to go through and make sure I'm getting all this right. But, it looks like... Okay, maybe the movie was just written by Goldberg by himself. Anyway, they wanted to make, like, the definitive hockey, you know, comedy or whatever. And I think you and I talked about that movie, and it's called Slapshot. Like, people can go back and listen to our podcast episode about that. I think they were really pissed that a guy from Canada directed Slapshot and they wanted like an American hockey movie or something. So
right.
Goon is directed by Michael Dowse. And they didn't come anywhere close to being as good as Slapshot is. Like, you can see they took a lot of the elements from Slapshot, like plot wise and stuff too. There are a lot of similarities, but I would just recommend people, and Goon, I should say, is available right now on video on demand, so people can check it out if they want to. I would say go out and seek out Slapshot if you haven't seen that, especially if you're a hockey fan. I think, Tyler, you and I both liked that movie when we talked about it, right? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it. So, yeah, I like a good, what's his name?
Paul
Newman movie, yeah.
So,
plus those brothers in the and Slapshot are pretty awesome. Yeah, and, like the Ramones.
You know, there are characters like that, that, you know, you've got like the crazy teammates, and you know, there's a lot of drama and stuff that goes on with those. Liev Schreiber, I think that's how you pronounce his name.
What's his name from X-Men?
Yeah, Wolverine. Sabretooth.
Sabretooth, that's right. Yeah. Wait, was he only Sabretooth in Wolverine Beginnings?
I think so, yeah. X-Men Origins Wolverine, yeah.
I wish they would have come out. Oh, wait, that Magneto one was actually First Class. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. I really wanted the Magneto one to come out, but then they made First Class, so it was awesome.
Yeah.
Well done, people who made that one.
Eugene Levy is also in this movie.
Rest in peace, Eugene Levy.
He's still alive.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He just played Jim's dad in American Reunion, also starring Sean William Scott. And I would actually recommend going
Eugene Levy, I think, is
going to see American Reunion before you see Goon. But anyway, what were you saying?
I think Eugene Levy is fairly good at writing and directing. Once Upon a Crime, I think he directed that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and he has a hand in all of those mockumentaries with Christopher Guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's fairly talented. I think American Pie just gives him a bad rep because he's in every single one of them.
Yeah. So Liev Schreiber plays like the old guard, Bash brother in the league, where Sean William Scott's new guy is kind of like the rookie, and everybody is getting really behind him and stuff. Like all the crowds and everything are really like pulling for him, and the whole thing is like leading up to this massive fight between them. It's like how Tyler, like sometimes you and I would play video games, like hockey video games with our friends back in high school and stuff, and like we didn't even care about what the score was. We would just go to the hit count afterwards, and whoever, like, you know, whichever team racked up the most like body checks into the boards and stuff, they were the ones who ended up winning. That's the mentality behind Goon. So if that sounds good to you, there's a lot, you know, there are things in here that are very likable, and like the violence is pretty brutal for like hockey fights and stuff.
All right.
But they're trying to make it seem like, I remember reading something about how they wanted to make this movie really accurate and like really have the hockey be like true to life, like what real hockey is, and it's not at all. It's like only one or two guys ever scores, and they, you know, it's very stylized and choreographed, and it just looks, it doesn't ever really feel like, oh, okay, this is a real thing that I could just like happen to be turning on my TV and watching a hockey game play out exactly like this one is. So I think they failed at their goal if that's what they're trying to do. But for making like a, you know, relatively harmless hockey comedy that doesn't quite stand up to the likes of Slapshot, I think Goon, you know, succeeds in that regard. So people can check it out if they want. Like I said, it's available on video on demand right now. So with that, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Mr. Baseball.
Elliot's really struggling up there, Ralph.
I know I haven't exactly been raking the ball lately.
The word is, he could be traded north.
It's not Canada.
Or west.
No, say it's not Cleveland.
But the smart money says he's headed east.
We got a call from a manager in
far east.
There's no way I'm going to play in Japan.
Welcome to Japan, Mr. Baseball.
What do you think of our country?
The airport's nice, and there's lots of little people walking, talking very fast.
Have you slept with Madonna?
What is this?
Practice.
We're not athletes. We're baseball players.
All right, so Mr. Baseball came out in 1992. It was directed by Fred Schapisi and stars none other than Tom Selleck and his mustache with a supporting role.
I think a mustache got nominated.
Best supporting mustache.
Yeah. supporting? Please, that needs to be one of our official awards when we do our podcast awards at the end of this year.
All right, sounds great.
Maybe at the end of the summer.
All right.
We don't want to get mixed up with the Academy.
I mean, I think Tom Selleck is probably going to win it.
I don't know. There have been some pretty good mustaches on these in these episodes.
Okay, we'll have to go.
I have a pretty good one. Viewers can't see it, but it is bushy.
All right, so this movie is about Tom Selleck plays a character named Jack Elliott, who is a baseball player kind of out of his time, a little past his prime.
He's a veteran.
And he gets traded to a league in Japan. I had no idea that's what this movie was about. I've heard of this film, but that's it. I've never seen any footage from it or anything. And growing up, I played baseball. I think you and I talked about this when we talked about 8 Men Out, the other baseball movie that we've discussed on the podcast. So I've watched
Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I hope so. That one's awesome. I watched like Rookie of the Year and all those movies and stuff growing up as a kid, but I never watched Mr. Baseball. So what did you think of this movie? Had you seen it before? Yes,
I had seen it as a kid. Okay. Yeah.
So what did you think of it?
I thought I remembered it being funny. I don't know. I was a dumb kid, I guess. Thought it was kind of like hilarious, like a comedy almost, you know, Tom Selleck, like Three Men and a Baby kind of comedy. You know, cause that one's hilarious. That's a knee slapper.
Right.
Except for the attempted kidnapping and murder of a small baby.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, he gets traded to this Japanese league, and the whole movie is about him getting kind of fixed with Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So it becomes less a comedy, more so kind of just, I wouldn't even call it a drama either. It's just a movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know kind of how to, I mean, it's a sports movie, definitely. There's a lot of baseball, and there's a lot of stuff about baseball, which I appreciate because, you know, you don't really see good baseball movies anymore. You usually see romance movies with a baseball backdrop or a drama with a baseball backdrop. You don't see like hardcore baseball movies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give it that. But as far as like the acting was a little stiff. I mean, Tom Selleck tried to be like this sarcastic, you know, like one-liner guy, but you know, he didn't really deliver there. I mean, it's nice to see Tom Selleck every once in a while in his younger days, but
I mean, are you a Tom Selleck fan? Because I don't know. Go ahead.
I enjoy a Tom Selleck movie every once in a while.
Okay.
I just like his charisma. I like his talent. I like that he does like kind of some. He's kind of like a richer man's David Hasselhoff.
Okay, and if you've seen Quigley Down Under?
As a child, yes. I need to return to Quigley Down Under as well.
Okay.
I have seen Three Men and a Baby. I think I've seen Three Men and a Little Lady.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, Tom Selleck's all over the place.
Yeah, I'm looking at his filmography right now. I'm trying to find a movie on here that I actually like, and it doesn't exist. There is.
That seems a little harsh, Ben.
I mean, it's just the truth, man. I don't know.
Name ones you've seen that you don't like.
Well, Three Men and Baby, I'm not really a big fan of. I saw that when I was a kid, so I don't really remember a lot of it. Quigley Down Under, I've only seen parts of, but I was just like, oh my god, this is so.
It takes place in Australia. Main character's Quigley.
And
Tom Selleck was in The Shadow Riders with Sam Elliott. That Louis L'Amour movie.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I remember that not being too hot, but, I mean, Sam Elliott's in it, so it's gold. Top five Sam Elliott movies, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah,
actually,
okay.
Actually, movies in my top five for Sam Elliott.
I thought your top five movies is also top five Sam Elliott movies of all time.
Absolutely, yes. I guess if you do, like, association process, ideally, yes.
Yeah.
Top five ever have Sam Elliott in them.
And then he was in Meet the Robinsons, which you actually wrote a review for NotJustNewMovies.com back in 2007. I never saw that movie.
It was an animated film. I don't think he had much to do other than voice acting. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just, maybe I want to look like Tom Selleck someday.
Yeah, sure.
When I get my chest hair.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just, you know, it's just good for us to kind of establish a baseline of where we come
like,
from as far
like
as Tom Selleck.
If I was fandom. Tom Selleck, I'd have a better personality. I'd have a better experience in life. I feel that Tom Selleck is better than me.
Oh,
therefore,
well.
I'm drawn to being more like Tom Selleck, like an idol, almost.
That is sad, sir.
Well, you know, keep my 30s and 40s Tom Selleck-y, and then maybe my 50s and 60s be more like Sam Elliott.
Okay. All right.
How's that work for you, Ben?
Man, I think you could find a better idol. But,
this is American Idol.
So for me, yeah, Tom Selleck just didn't really, like you said, it wasn't really that funny, and he was clearly trying to be. And I think that's probably also a product of the time and just the fact that we've seen this kind of fish out of water premise done so many times that maybe this movie was hilarious back in 1992. I kind of doubt it. We should also mention when we're talking about the script that Gary Ross, the director of The Hunger Games, co-wrote the script for this movie.
That is why the Apple II chose it. How weird is that?
Yeah, strange.
How does the Apple II know that stuff?
I don't know. It loves obscure trivia.
I mean, it's the acting's a little stiff, but it's still not a bad film. I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, it's as far. I mean, okay, I wrote it off as if it's trying to be a comedy, it's not a comedy. I mean, it's funny. It's got some funny parts, but it's not a comedy like Meet the Fockers or something. It's going to comedy now. But I mean, as a movie, I think it's kind of an interesting little film of just like this would probably make it as a good independent film. You know, we're always talking about indie films and there's these really small stories and it deals with like three people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that kind of movie. I mean, it's not a big blockbuster. It's not a big hilarious comedy. It's not a big, you know, 3 hour long drama. It's just kind of like a simple film about baseball, about this guy who goes to Japan. And I think, I think if it came out in like 16 theaters and it was shown at like Sundance or something, I think it'd be a fairly popular film.
You are out of your mind.
It's that kind of movie. It's a very small scale film.
I was with you up until the part about coming out Sundance, but you know, for me, it's like the movie doesn't have any real likable characters in it. Tom Selleck is a colossal douchebag throughout the entire movie. Like, there's nothing redeeming about him in any way except for, of course, his mustache, which he also, we should mention, says offers free mustache rides for the ladies.
Right.
In the movie, which I thought was shocking and pretty inappropriate.
I think you get a license to say that whenever you grow a mustache of that caliber.
I think you're probably right with that,
State has to hand that over to you.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he didn't think anybody spoke English.
Right, so yeah, no, I know.
Basically just...
But, like, he's such an asshat to everyone. Like, the consigliere guy makes him seem way nicer than he actually is for no reason. Like, why does that guy – why is he invested in whether or not Tom Selleck succeeds? He's just – he's got a job on the team. It doesn't matter. Like, he's just an interpreter. He's, like, a nice person. And that's it. Like, there's no reason for him to be treating Tom Selleck well when he's just so disrespectful and he's just oblivious and arrogant and really, like, the whole movie is, like, Tom Selleck is this rogue American rolling in and whitewashing the way that they play baseball. It's, like, it's kind of insulting when you think about it. The way that, like, the whole movie just kind of takes Tom Selleck's side and doesn't really have him learn that many, like, it doesn't have him learn a lesson in a way that makes him change his behavior, you know? It has him learn lessons and the team succeeds ultimately because of it, but he doesn't really do that much to... It's more he inflicts change on the way on their attitude instead of their attitude inflicting change on him.
I don't know. I think he learns a couple things. He addresses them in Japanese at one point to apologize. Mm-hmm. He goes on all the talk shows when originally he was kind of opposed to being used as the team mascot.
Yeah.
You know, he starts to work with the manager, take advice as opposed to being stubborn about it and, you know, doing it his way. I think he changes a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not like a true full reversal, but seriously, in the real world, does anybody like fully change their ways? I mean,
okay.
He changes the probably the right human amount for a film.
I'll give you that. That's a good point. Let's see, what else did I have written down here?
I mean, I thought the manager was an interesting character. I mean, as far as likable characters. I mean, the girl was a little, are you female power or what are you? I didn't really get the whole chick aspect of the film. I mean, I guess like, she goes on to be like, they go back to America. They go back to Detroit, of all places.
Yeah.
For her to be a successful, artist or something.
Yeah.
I understood that, but it was just she was very. I think her role, that message that she was trying to do, that character was trying to do, was a little lost on me. I guess they didn't do that They didn't do that well enough.
Yeah, it was such a bullshit romance. Like, there was no reason for these two characters to be together, and their chemistry was terrible. Their love story didn't really make a lot of sense. She was literally, I think, the first woman, aside from a reporter, to speak to him in the country, so he's just like, yep, I'm doing it. Like, I'm going after you.
Mustache ride.
So, and, like, of course she's the manager's daughter.
Didn't see that coming, Ben.
Like, it's so, like, that almost is as insulting as what I was talking about earlier. It's like, this movie just, like, almost paints Japanese people as, like...
I don't know. They don't really give an indication that they're related until he meets up at their house.
No. I didn't mean that, like... I think just as somebody who's watched a lot of movies, I was thinking like, okay, here it comes. Like,
yeah, it wasn't like a big Shyamalan ding dong twist or anything. Like, it happens right at the end. It happens fairly somewhere in the middle, and like the whole rest of the movie is about their relationship.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's definitely not like a huge reveal, but when it happens, it's just like so eye rolling. Like, oh man, you got to be kidding me! Like, come on.
And then when the manager kind of tries to correct things with his daughter at the end, I thought that was fairly heartwarming, where he says, you know, I want to be honest with you from now on. I'm not going to be like straight up like concrete dad anymore, which I believe is another Tom Selleck movie, Concrete Dad, or it should be.
Tom
Selleck gets caught in a construction site.
He's physically made of concrete.
Kids, no, don't hit the lever.
Oh, man, we should write that for him. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, the manager does have a little bit of character and kind of personality to him because he has this backstory of being... you know, a really successful player. And of course, Tom Selleck, you know, comes along and he's like threatening to break his record and stuff.
That didn't come in until the very end too. You're just kind of like, there's a record now. Oh, great.
Yeah.
But we haven't gotten to the best part. The Allstate agent guy,
Dennis Haysbert. Yes.
Making an appearance as some American baseball player who's just accepted every aspect of Japanese culture.
Right.
Like, without a like a misstep.
Well, you know, they said that he's been there for 5 years or something, so presumably there could be like a Mr. Baseball prequel where the same thing happens to Dennis Haysbert's character.
The early years.
But what did you think about Dennis Haysbert in this movie? I mean,
I liked his character. I liked that there was another... it wasn't just Tom Selleck in a sea of Japanese people.
Mm-hmm.
It was this other guy that was kind of like almost like a side of his conscience that was like, hey, listen, this is all we have, you know, like this is where we're traded. This is how we make our money. You might as well just accept things. And then Tom Selleck's other side of the conscience says, oh, just be a dick.
Yeah. I think he was like a necessary function of the movie. You know, he's like kind of a bridge between the American way and the Japanese way. So I think like the audience needed that character there.
Thing I had a problem with is like all of these minute things that the Japanese players did, and like everything Tom Selleck did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't like everyone treated him like shit because like he got into the bathtub before, you know, they had to shower like little children on these little stools before they go into the bathtub. And it's like, get over yourselves, like let the man soak up.
Yeah.
Is there like a germ thing that they're all about? Like, I don't know. Like a lot of the cultural things, it wasn't like they handed them a book and said, okay, bone up on Japanese culture because you're going to be tested once you enter the locker room. Like I felt for Tom Selleck because I wouldn't know what the hell was going on either. And
yeah,
you go out to practice and everyone's doing like these weird, like crunches with the baseball bat and stuff. And he's like, what the hell is this? Like we do jumping jacks and then throw the ball around for like a half an hour and then we play the game. Like one of the funnier lines is like, we're not athletes, we're baseball players.
Yeah.
Which if you look at some of the baseball players like CC Sabathia, who weighs a good 600 pounds up on the mound, like he is definitely not an athlete. Like you tell that guy to run 50 paces and he will drop dead.
Yeah.
Not a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
But Yankees, the Detroit Tigers, the Dodgers, I like that there were official MLB teams in the movie, because it could have been a lot shittier if they had used like the New York Scoutmasters or something.
Yeah, and you know,
teams that don't even exist.
And he played on the Dragons, which I think is actually a professional team.
Yeah, I think so too, because they use a lot of the very similar emblems and stuff, those of the American teams, which again, you could, if you look at like the minor league teams in the U.S., a lot of them are like sub teams, they're like under greater organizations. So like you'll have like the Detroit Tigers will have minor league teams in other cities, not just Detroit. And so sometimes you may get very similar logos and things like that.
Right.
Unless you live Southern Baseball League, where it's like the Montgomery Biscuits.
Yeah, and like the Mississippi Mud Barons.
The Mississippi Mud Cats, yeah. Birmingham Barons is the league Michael Jordan played on when he took on his baseball career. I always play the Jacksonville Suns. Brevard County Manatees, I believe, is another.
That's pretty awesome.
Do they have any minor league teams out there in California, Ben?
I really don't know. I haven't really followed the baseball scene much since I moved out here a few years ago.
Shame.
So, you know, I was talking about how Goon tries to make it seem like fighting is like a huge part of it, and how like they a huge part of hockey rather, and how like they're not necessarily accurate with the way that the game is played. I think Mr. Baseball, the baseball elements of it are like fairly accurate. There's nothing that was too nothing that struck me as being too problematic with the way that they depicted the game, with the exception of the bench-clearing brawls that seem to happen, like, every fourth or fifth game. Like, that is not a regular thing in professional sports.
In baseball, it sometimes happens.
Well, it does.
More often than you would think.
It does sometimes happen, but it's like, every time anyone would like threaten Tom Selleck's manhood in any way, the entire like everyone just emptied out onto the field, and they were just like brawling like crazy.
Yeah.
Like, this is way too like over the top for the way that they realistically depicted baseball in the rest of the film. This one element is just like overblown.
Yeah, it's pretty realistic though. I mean, when like a pitcher beams somebody with the ball.
Yeah.
You're either messing up, which is usually not the case. You're sending a message to the team.
Yeah.
Usually the umpire, like if he gives them a warning and they do it again, like they'll throw those guys out.
Right.
But if a fight breaks out, usually the benches are cleared for fun. I would say I would do it for fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like the aspect of Tom Selleck bringing over like American baseball to the Japanese, because I just think that's interesting. I guess I don't know a lot about Japanese baseball. So if it's anything like that, if Japanese baseball is really realistically portrayed, I like the idea of a movie bringing American baseball ideals to Japanese baseball.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, for me, that kind of, like, that whole concept of him, like, single-handedly, overthrowing their style and, like, years of tradition and stuff just seemed like such an arrogant move on the screenwriter's part and like the filmmaker's part of being like, oh yeah, this is fine, like this is totally cool, like, you know, we're just crapping on all this tradition,
the Patriots,
because Tom Selleck and his mustache say do it this way, so by the end of the movie everybody does it his way and he's not the one who has to conform to, you know, and it strikes
me
as
supporting
like,
mustache Ben. Those awards mean things.
Yeah. Oh, and I actually, the one thing, the one other element of baseball in particular, and I know we're getting into like some super specific stuff here, so I apologize to the listeners, but I did want to talk to you about this, Tyler. The way that they were intentionally walking Tom Selleck's character, his name? Jack Elliott. They were intentionally walking Elliott in that one game where he was really close to breaking the record, right? And then, you know, like, so one of the funnier parts that I thought, that I kind of chuckled at, was when he, like, flips the bat upside down. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
The guy's, like, in the middle of just pitching him four balls in a row on purpose just to walk him, and he just, like, is like, whatever, I know you're going to do this, so I'm just going to flip the bat upside down. So,
Hilarious, actually. One of the other players... That moves it back into the comedy category.
One of the other players tells him, like, yeah, man, there's $1,000 fine for every strike that the pitcher throws to you, because the Japanese, even though you're on a different team, the Japanese want to stick together and make sure that a Japanese guy continues to hold this record. And then, so they're like intentionally walking him, and then all of a sudden they just start throwing strikes to him at the end of the game. So he bunts and they end up winning. But like, why didn't they just intentionally walk him at the end of the game? Did I miss something there, or did you pick up on?
I believe. Well, it depends on the situation. Now, if there aren't any men on base, they can clearly walk a guy because he's just going to go to first. Now, if bases are loaded and you walk a guy, you move in the runner, which would have given them the run. So you're trying to strike him out at that point.
So I guess the only reasonable conclusion would be that the bases were loaded and I just didn't notice that.
Yeah, there was something going on with the bases. That's why you really can't walk a guy, or else you're going to, for instance, let's say there's a man on first and second. You walk Tom Selleck. Now bases are loaded. That's not something you want.
Yeah,
as a pitching team, because the next guy comes up, hits a home run, and you got four runs now.
Yeah, or even hits a single, and you know, you lose the game. So yeah.
So there was something technical that had them throwing strikes at the end.
Okay, all right. So I'll let that one go. I will not, however, let go when Tom Selleck referred to a shrump instead of a slump in the movie. I was like, dude, come on. This is something that like Tyler does. When he's when he's trying to be offensively racist, like this is not.
Do not accuse me of that, Benjamin.
I mean,
me and Charles Barkley do when we're trying to be overtly offensive.
Yeah, I mean, you do it as a joke.
It's insanity.
Did Charles Barkley say that?
Yeah, he said that.
Wow. Okay.
That was funny. Maybe like 3 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. In the middle.
May not play anymore. Sorry.
In the midst of Linsanity. So yeah, I don't know. I was just kind of like
shrump. I forgot about that.
I
don't do that, folks. Yes, I do.
I found
the moment calls for it. If we're in the after midnight Chinese restaurant, I will pull that out because sometimes.
Because you're tight.
Get free egg rolls. We get free rice. I don't know.
You're tight with the wait staff there, and they find it hilarious.
They think it's charming.
So. Hiroko, the female love interest.
Hiroko.
I think that's how you pronounce her name.
On a road trip.
She.
Did I get a Budweiser or a Bud Light or something when we say that?
No. You're referencing that commercial, that Bud Light commercial from the Super Bowl with the dog named Wego, I think.
Wego. And then you go, you got to call Wego, and it goes, here we go.
And, frequent Not Just No Movies podcast guest Mike Eisenberg worked on that commercial, so we should.
Yeah, it's all about animal adoption or something like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him
protection
a shout
of
out.
Animal rights and animal rights. Let's just make that.
So anyway, Hiroko at one point runs her hand through the mound of chest hair on Tom Selleck, and I nearly vomited. I don't know if you know the scene I'm talking about where they're like in the bathtub together.
Oh, yes. When she's giving us the very small bathtub sponge bath.
Yeah, and I was like, dear God, man, there's, like, that is, like...
That's a sign of power in Japan, Ben.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know either.
But it was pretty disgusting, so...
Well, I guess, yeah, sure.
I think it put even Sean Connery to shame in Zardoz, so...
I think, didn't Bond have like chest hair like that in like Goldfinger?
Yeah, I think so.
Wasn't that heavily featured?
Yeah, probably. It was just like, man, this woman is like all up in this chest hair. This is messed up. Wow. Sorry to take
maybe
it.
Maybe
it there.
Promotes chest hair or something like that. I don't think there was a lot of chest hair on the Japanese men. Maybe that's a thing.
Yeah. I did like the commercial that he was in.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's very, like, true to life with how, you know, big celebrities go over there and just do, like, these obscure commercials and get paid, like, millions of dollars to do it. So,
millions of yen.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there's some sort of translation going on. I don't know, man. There's a lot of stuff in this movie I didn't really care for. There's a lot of training montages, this whole versus fun mentality, and it's like stupid jokes, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of like... stereotypical Japanese culture stuff going on that I was just like, oh, this is just so lazy.
This wasn't a great pick for a podcast. This goes down with, like, Doll Man.
Oh, yeah.
Trancers, yes. Doll Man, no.
Well, I mean, at least Doll Man had, like, the novelty of it, of, like, this is so ridiculous. But this movie is just, Mr. Baseball is just, like, so right down the middle and, like, kind of boring. And it's kind of a terrible baseball movie. I mean, as much as we said, like, the baseball sequences in it are competently done, you know, you can't have just that. Like, the rest of the movie has to be good for it to be a good movie, you know? Otherwise, it's just like, go watch baseball or watch, like, a documentary about baseball or something. I think Ken Burns has one.
Ken Burns,
so,
yeah. Ken Burns Baseball.
You know, it's like, you know, you need something like Field of Dreams, like Moneyball, like even Rookie of the Year. I mean, has, like, the baseball sequences in that are a lot more heightened and really kind of cartoonish, but there's a character that you care about and, like, real drama happening, even though there's, like, almost like a supernatural element to Rookie of the Year. The Sandlot is another great one. I mean, even 8 Men Out has, like, the controversy and, like, the team mentality. This one, it's just, like, it's
in
so
a league of their own. That's a great one.
Yeah, and I mean, and Mr. Baseball has, like, so much, like, Tom Selleck versus the world type of mentality that I just didn't really... It never... Because I didn't like Tom Selleck's character, I never really got into the movie, so...
How can people go apeshit over Scott Pilgrim versus the world and not go crazy for Tom Selleck versus the world? Seriously. That's my question.
I don't know. I just don't...
We have the ideas to put this guy back on top. Concrete Dad. Tom Selleck versus the World, a comic book.
So yeah, that's it. Oh, I wanted to read a couple pieces of trivia off the IMDb page for Mr. Baseball.
Okay.
Dennis Haysbert, who plays Max, previously played for the Cleveland Indians as Pedro Serrano in Major League. So there's that. I did not remember that Dennis Haysbert was also in that film. The rookie who pushes Tom Selleck's character off the Yankees roster was played by Frank Thomas, who went on to become one of the best MLB hitters in the 90s and won 2 MVP awards. He was actually one of my favorite baseball players as a kid, and I didn't recognize him in this movie. So,
nice.
Kudos to Frank Thomas for showing up there. And, that's pretty much it. So,
well, you know, it's a simple film, low scale, not outrageously funny as I thought it was going to be, but... You know, if you're just a huge baseball fan and you love all the movies, baseball movies we've listed, you know, you may want to check out Mr. Baseball, see if it's in your strike zone.
Ooh, nice.
Maybe you can, I don't know, off the fly, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was a waste. I should have just stopped there. With
the you had the Costanza moment where you're like,
good night, everybody.
Yeah. I would say skip this movie. It's not worth watching. there's that. So, Tyler, why don't you go rev up the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be
doing. Yeah, let me go crank the old girl up. Give her a little mustache ride on the keys. All right, so... we watched Mr. Baseball in honor of, baseball season starting. But this week, Ben, do you know what this week is?
Yeah, I do, actually. We talked about this before.
Oh, did we talk about this? All right, don't feign like we're trying to create a skit or anything. Friday the 13th, this weekend. And you know what's on Instant Watch, Ben?
The 13th.
They know. Oh, damn it. Friday the 13th, Part 1, and Friday the 13th, Part 2, which I have not seen. So I've seen Part 1, great movie. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But we're probably going to put more focus on Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yes.
Because I still have no idea how Jason gets the hockey mask and becomes Jason.
Right.
Like, seriously. Spoiler alert for the first movie. It's like 30 years old, people.
Yeah.
Not heavily featured in the first film.
Yeah.
But I believe he comes around in Part 2. I'm hoping he does. I've seen Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell. Heavily features Jason. Not as much as I would think. But... heavily featured, so I've seen Part 1 and Part 9. I'm ready to get to the... I've got the two pieces of bread. I need the rest of the sandwich.
Yep.
So we're gonna check out Parts 1 and Part 2 on Instant Watch, Friday the 13th. So come back and check it out. We'll probably have a little more fun than with Mr. Baseball because these slasher movies. These are classics.
Yeah, and I think, man, you've got a lot of sandwich to fill in there. If you
I do.
If
you at one point, he takes Manhattan. Have you heard of this?
I have, yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, like, part six, the final chapter, when it truly is not the final chapter.
Right, that's that whole...
Spoiler alert.
Never-ending story conundrum going on.
Yeah.
And
then, of course, there's Jason in space.
Right, and I heard...
Freddy vs. Jason.
I think Jason X or Jason 10 or Jason in Space is coming to theaters here in Los Angeles for some reason. Briefly.
You may want to check that out.
I heard from frequent
screening.
Frequent guest Joe Leninger, a.k.a. Panther Joe, saw this one, I think, in theaters and told me it was terrible back in, like, 2003 or 4 when it came out originally. So,
right.
I don't...
But you got to give it props. It's still in continuity with the rest of the movies.
Sure.
You don't,
yeah, I mean,
you don't see that anymore.
Any series that runs, you know, 10 to 13 movies or something, I'll give some sort of credit to.
Yeah. You see Spider-Man movies, they can't even last anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
So we will be talking about, or we'll be watching and talking about the first two Friday the 13th movies. And as Tyler mentioned, we both saw the first Friday the 13th film, like, I don't know, a year ago or something, maybe a little longer than that, but recent enough where I don't feel the need to rewatch it. So we'll just kind of like barely touch on that one. And most of the conversation will be regarding Friday the 13th part two. So keep that in mind if you're watching along with us. If you do decide to watch along with us, shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about the Friday the 13th franchise as a whole, or Mr. Baseball, or anything that we've talked about. You can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail, which I think would be preferred at this point, just because I like listening to voicemails, and they're always really fun.
Only been talking about it for like 93 weeks.
Yeah, you know. Give or take. So do that at 904-469-6566. Or if you're like super high tech and you have a microphone on your computer, record your voicemail on your computer and email it to us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. The sound quality would be a lot better that way. So also if you're in the know, tech savvy and all that stuff, you can subscribe to us for free in iTunes. Please leave us a review. That would be awesome. We're really, because of this whole mix up we've had with the iTunes feed, we're really looking for comments and reviews and all kinds of stuff to try to boost our popularity. We kind of lost a lot of our listeners and stuff like that with the whole switchover. So we're still, even though we're in what episode is this now, Tyler, like 85 or something, 84 maybe, we're still considered a relatively new podcast, I think, because we basically had to start from scratch like 10 weeks ago. So
Yeah, when you search us, NJNM Geek Tyrant, I think, will take
yes,
you right.
Yes, Geek Tyrant -NJNM. Yeah, anything like that, you'll find us in Facebook or in iTunes. You can also check us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/NJNM podcast. We don't have any emails or new followers this week, but Tyler is going to read something for us. Yeah.
Yeah, we get a lot of unread. We don't read them on the podcast, but we're going to start now. People comment on our posts all the time, our podcast posts on notjustmemovies.com. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these people should get a little light shed on them because usually they're pretty funny. I got a couple right here from our last few episodes.
Okay.
Do you want to go through these?
Yeah, go for it. Read them out.
You want to put in a little audience comments time? We got maybe some applause or something in the background. Well,
okay.
You know, for a second.
Thanks for giving me more work to do. Appreciate
that's
it.
That's okay. That's okay. No problem. From our episode on The Hustler, Alyssa Merwin said, "Love the blog!" Exclamation point. So, nice job, Ben.
Thank you.
Winning over the people with the blog. On our episode, The Shadow, where I hosted with Allison Folklore Lauren, Jay Nevermind said, "Nice episode. Haven't seen The Shadow since it was first released. My memories of it were mostly unfavorable, but now you two have me wondering, did I miss something? Was there magic in this film that I was too blind to see? And what about a knife with a face? Guess I'll be going back to rewatch The Shadow, and you are all to thank or blame." So thank you, Jay Nevermind, for that. We really like The Shadow. Go back and listen to that episode. That one was really good. Our recent episode, The Iron Giant, two comments. One, and Ben, you'll remember this name, Michael Chiklis.
Oh, yes.
Chiklis Gate from episode, I don't know, 18. Ben called out Michael Chiklis, and the world turned its head. Yeah. Michael Chiklis came on to NotJustNewMovies.com and said, Ben P., referring to Ben Pearson, watched the Rock Cena documentary this weekend. Maybe if there was no, maybe if there were no more reruns of Dance Moms to peruse. So apparently he's calling out your taste in television.
Yes.
And giving credit to The Rock as one of the most high-profiled, successful movie stars in the business, maybe you're going a bit loony, Ben P., because lest you forget, you're looking at him. So Mike Chiklis, not a big fan of Ben Pearson.
And not only calling me out, but seemingly calling out The Rock himself.
Calling out The Rock, the great one. Dave Meltzer, who followed up with this comment, said, we are now getting word that the main event at WrestleMania 50 will indeed be Michael Chiklis versus Ben P. Pearson, in a no-holds-barred Panthers purgatory match with Julie Benz as the special enforcer. No word yet as to whether or not the intergalactic title will be on the line, but our records show that this is the first match set in stone in advance of 22 years. So everybody, keep up with that. That match will be going down in the year 20-something.
Okay.
WrestleMania 50. Ben P. versus Michael Chiklis. It'll finally culminate after 25 years.
Wow.
Who's the better man, Michael Chiklis or an aged Ben Pearson?
I think I'm going to have to – I'm rapidly approaching the end of The Shield, watching that show. We started back in May of 2011. Pat and I, former NJNM podcast co-host Pat – and I,
P-Mills.
So as soon as we're done with that, I think I'm going to issue some sort of official end to Chiklis Gate and like call out to him, maybe try to get him on the podcast or something. We'll
but
see.
But then what happens to WrestleMania 50, Ben?
I think it's going to have to be, either canceled, or we'll have to hope that some other feud between Michael Chiklis and I arises in those years.
Who can fill the shoes of a 100-year-old Michael Chiklis and probably in his 60s, Ben Pearson? How old are you?
Oh, man. All right. So
yeah, so keep commenting on those posts. We'll read them online.
Sure.
On the air, whatever this is called.
Definitely. So why don't we finish up the character name game, Tyler?
Sure. I had the character name game this week. Character name this week was Gary Houseman. Gary Houseman.
All right, so I'm going to guess that the connection to a movie that came out this weekend was American Reunion.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that Sean William Scott is the main person here.
Okay.
And Gary Houseman was the character that he played in... let's see. How about Balls of Fury? Is that a Sean William Scott?
That is a movie, but that is not this movie that
okay.
I'm referring to.
All right. How
you
much?
Or excruciatingly close, though.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm right with the Sean William Scott thing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So this is a Sean William Scott movie. Gary Houseman. Is it... It's not Dude, Where's My Car, is it?
No, okay. Incorrect.
Man, it's really difficult to think of Sean William Scott movies that aren't in the American Pie franchise.
This was directed by Danny Lehner.
Danny Lehner, no, not doing me.
Co-stars Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid? What?
From 2009.
Wow, is it...
The DVD has an extra big and bouncy edition, and it features a scene from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Oh, no, it's from the director of Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
There's
Sorry.
A bouncy ball feature? Is this...
extra
oh,
big.
Oh, is it Mr. Woodcock?
No.
Oh, man.
Close, though. He's also in that. And on the IMDb page, it says people who like this also like Mr. Woodcock.
Oh, man. So close. Is it a National Lampoon's movie?
It does not indicate, no.
Okay. All right.
Let me just give you the synopsis of the film.
Okay, do it.
A high school janitor has not recovered from his failed career as a tennis pro. He begins coaching his beloved sport to a group of misfits and leads them to the Nebraska State Championships.
Oh, man. I feel like I remember seeing a preview for this on, like, a direct-to-DVD movie.
Yeah, it's 87 minutes long.
Is it called, like, Black Balls or something?
No. You want me to just tell you?
Yeah.
You're so close. It's called Balls Out, Gary the Tennis Coach.
Oh, man. Okay.
Balls Out, : Gary the Tennis Coach.
All right. I think Vince Vaughn was in a National Lampoon movie called Balls... what was the one that I just guessed? I don't remember now. It doesn't...
Balls Deep?
No. anyway.
Tagline, small balls, big admission. Big ambition.
Okay. All right. Well, there's that. So you've stumped me. Well done. Sean William Scott's career is so obscure.
Yeah. It's all over the place.
Did you see American Reunion, Tyler?
No.
Okay. Do you have any interest in seeing it or intention?
No, I've never seen a movie in the franchise.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Pretty proud of that.
Cool. okay, so I think that'll
pretty
much...
I was more of a fan of, like, the Scream series back in the 90s.
Yeah.
As a kid who couldn't watch, you know, R-rated films.
Sure. No, I mean, I think the Scream series were all R-rated, but...
Yeah, that's what I said.
No.
I had to pick and choose which R-rated films I
could... Oh, I see.
...can watch, so, and I chose Scream movies.
Gotcha. All right. So that's pretty much going to bring us to the end of this episode. Let's go back and forth and tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
TheSolarSentinel.blogspot.com. If you go on there right now, look at Mega Man Dies at the End. There's this great internet series that I've have no hand in creating, but I've posted on my blog as if it's something I have a hand in. so check that out. It's really funny. Also, if you go over to NotJustNewMovies.com, my top five awesome houses are still up there.
Mm-hmm.
Comment free. Let's remedy that. You might just get read here on the podcast. And Twitter, I run the Twitter account, so
yes,
whatever.
So you can find him there at NJNM Podcast. For me, you guys can track me down on Twitter as well, twitter.com/BenPears, BenPears. You can... read my ramblings on geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. And you can hear me occasionally on the Geek Tyrant quasi-weekly, monthly, whatever podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of Jerry Goldsmith's ridiculous score for Mr. Baseball, which I forgot to mention, but it is really ludicrous. There are so many... thrown into Japanese, like it's so stereotypical.
Man, that's racist.
That's what the soundtrack is. Actually, for people who've listened to this episode, when I played the trailer, the beginning of the trailer actually has that noise, like that particular music breakdown as like the leading into the Japan thing. So it's not...
Okay.
I'm not racist, but...
I'm not racist.
So yeah, we will be... fittingly, talking about the first two Friday the 13th films. Everybody have a happy Friday the 13th. Enjoy your week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.